From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A peace deal to end the conflict in Libya and establish a government of national unity was announced by the UN Security Council. The overthrow of the former Libyan government 4 years ago by U.S.-led NATO forces led to two rival governments battling for power in the North African country. The UN-brokered Libyan political agreement was signed last week in Morocco and follows a year of difficult negotiations. Deanne Penn reports.
The Security Council has unanimously adopted a resolution which calls for the formation of the unity government within 30 days as specified in the peace agreement. The resolution was sponsored by the United Kingdom. Matthew Rycroft is the country's ambassador to the United Nations.
We welcome the process now underway to move to the formation of that government of national accord in the coming weeks, and we ask the UN Secretary-General's Special Representative to continue his efforts to drive forward progress to this end. And we urge all those who have not yet signed to decide now to support the agreement and to work with the government of national accord once formed. The door is open and the hand of friendship extended.
The resolution also urges countries to assist the new government with defeating the terrorist group ISIL, also known as Daesh, and other such groups operating in Libya. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
Martin Kobler, the special representative and head of the United Nations Support Mission in Libya, or UNSMIL, took questions from the press following the adoption of that Security Council resolution on the situation in the North African country. And we'll bring you that later in this newscast. Meanwhile, the U.S. position on the fate of Syria's president, Bashar al-Assad, has changed over the course of this past year. RT's Guyan Shichikayan has more.
The U.S. has signed on to a U.N. Security Council resolution which is set to lead to a political transition in Syria. But when Bashar al-Assad goes is not spelled out.
Position is that Assad has lost legitimacy. He cannot be part of a Syrian government. How and when he goes is still under debate.
Would you say that it is still being discussed and decided whether or not he can be part of the transition process?
So what I'd say is it is still being decided and discussed what that transitional process looks like.
There was a time when the U.S. insisted on Bashar Assad's departure before any political process could be started.
No future for Assad in Syria?
In Syria, the only way that the civil war will end is an inclusive political transition to a new government without Bashar Assad.
The last year and a half, we have said that Assad has to go.
But realism also requires a managed transition away from Assad and to a new leader.
It is not conceivable that Mr. Assad can regain legitimacy
and hasten the day that Assad's bloody tenure comes to an end.
Assad is going to have to leave.
Although the State Department claims the U.S. position on Bashar Assad has not changed, many see it otherwise.
Obviously, there's been something of almost a tectonic shift. Two things have happened over the course of the last few months. Growing realization, that the policy of regime change, which had been on the agenda for the most part for this U.S. administration, has been an absolute failure and has led to the growth of ISIL and the more killing and devastation in the region than the region has seen in decades. Secondly, the shooting down of the Russian plane by the Turks sent a message that perhaps this conflict will lead to a major conflict between great powers.
U.S. officials still say Assad needs to leave, only now they add he can stay for a while.
Last Friday's UN Security Council resolution on Syria was accompanied by statements from council members that it must be the Syrian people who decide the fate of their country, a position that's been stated repeatedly by U.S. officials. But those same U.S. officials have yet to say what will happen when elections are held in Syria in 2016 or thereafter if President Assad should end up the winner. In its first new budget after deciding to scrap constitutional constraints on its military, Japan's government approved another year of record military spending for 2016. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's cabinet Thursday approved $42 billion in military spending for 2016, an increase of 1.5% over 2015, which was also a record high. Next year's spending plan includes the purchase of U.S. surveillance aircraft and F-35 fighter jets. The proposed budget would be the fourth annual increase in Japan's military spending under Abe's government and represents 5% of the total declared budget. Tokyo argues that the move is aimed at boosting defenses of Japan's southern islands, where it has a territorial dispute with China. This past September, Japan's lawmakers approved controversial legislation ending the country's decades-long constitutional constraints on its armed forces to allow overseas troop deployments. The legislation introduced by Abe triggered nationwide protests over fears that the country would be put at risk of being dragged into U.S.-led wars. China Wednesday rejected U.S. criticism against the draft law on terrorism and urged Washington to refrain from applying double standards in the fight against terrorism. Hong Li, a spokesperson for China's foreign ministry, said the draft anti-terrorism law is completely reasonable.
In formulating the anti-terrorism law, we refer to the laws of other countries, including the United States. The draft of our anti-terrorism law mandates the obligation of telecommunications operators, internet servers, and service providers to assist public and state security organs in stopping and probing terrorist activities. This is both reasonable and necessary.
U.S. criticism of China comes as the U.S. National Security Agency, citing terrorism as an excuse, conducts the largest espionage program in history, including collecting phone, email, and social media data on Americans and others around the world. A peace deal to end the conflict in Libya and establish a government of national unity was announced by the UN Security Council. The Special Representative and head of the United Nations Support Mission in Libya, or UNSMIL, took questions from the press following the adoption of that Security Council resolution on the situation in the North African country.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of UN Correspondent Association, thank you for giving us this briefing. We have now the third phase of the European operation in the Mediterranean. This is one, and the threat of ISIS and terrorism inside Libya. Do you see that this resolution gives the National Accord government the authority to request directly any military assistance from any other country?
Well, I sensed in my first weeks that one of the consensus topics, there was not consensus on most of the topics, but the consensus was the fight against Daesh and the threat of the Daesh, Ansar al-Sharia and Al-Qaeda and affiliated terrorist organizations, which have been spreading over the last half year, not only to the east and to the west, but also to the south. And this was of a great concern to all groups I have spoken to in Libya, but also to the neighboring states, not only to the Europeans. It is in particular the Libyans themselves, in particular the neighboring states who fear a spillover. So this was the consensus topic. Now, when it comes now to the authority, coming back to your question to request foreign assistance, I mean, this is now not the primary objective. The government of national unity has to organize a Libyan fight against the Daesh. They have to bring the different groups together to build up a security structure, a regular army who is fighting the Daesh. If then, later on, the question arises whether to request foreign assistance, the sole authority of the government of national unity to do so. But I would not concentrate now on the question of whether to request assistance. First of all, the government of national unity is not yet in place. Number one, the government now has 30 days, or now they are only 27 or 26 days now to form the government of national unity. Then another 10 days for the House of Representatives to approve. And then then the work begins, and security structures have to be established, in particular when it comes to the fight against Daesh. And then Later on, the question arises whether they are going to do it alone or they need outside assistance. But the government should concentrate now really on bringing the Libyans on one page in the fight against terrorism.
Thank you. Tom.
Thank you very much. Whether to fight ISIS or to secure the borders or to stop the illegal smuggling or to collect the arms within the country, they need the Libyan government, when formed, the National Accord government, will need a strong military army to do all these tasks. And for that, they need to be armed. There is an embargo, armed embargo in Libya. I see no mention in this resolution or any promise or any indication that once you succeed Libyans in forming your National Accord government, we will look into lifting the embargo of arms. Why isn't that mentioned at all, since it's a very important topic for the Libyans? They want to fight themselves. They don't want foreign interference or foreign assistance. They mentioned that many times in high official levels. They are capable of fighting, but they want to be armed. Why isn't there any mention, and is there any chance of, after the formation of the government of National Accord, that this will be taken seriously this time and the embargo lifted?
No, I think it will be taken very seriously, because as you say, there is only a military kind of solution with Daesh and the others. There is no political kind of solution. That's why a future army needs, and the army, the regular forces, they need weapons. This is very, very clear. Now, but it all boils down to the question to have a government of national unity in place, which then might request an exemption from the weapons embargo. Yeah, but it's very important to have the government in place first, and they then will find with the Security Council a mechanism in order to request for an exemption of weapons embargo.
Why wasn't it mentioned in this resolution incentivizing the Libyans that we will help you, we will lift the embargo to enable you to fight ISIS and the likes?
I mean, this you ask the Security Council, not me. I'm the SRSG here for Libya, but I can assure you that it is very clear, and that those regular units who have the who are approved now by the resolution, they also need weapons to fight terrorism in Libya. So this is a kind of natural, will be a natural development. This resolution concentrates now on recognizing and acknowledging the GNA as the sole legitimate body. And once again, I only can advocate, let's now go rapidly, step by step. Yeah, this government is not yet there. It has to be formed. It has to be widely negotiated. Then it must be endorsed by the House of Representatives, and then they must settle. They must build up the new security structure, and then we come to the point that an exemption of the weapons embargo can be requested.
Matthew.
Sure, thanks a lot. Matthew Lee, InterCity Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks for the briefing. I wanted to ask you about General Haftar. It said that you visited him on December 16th, and the quote, at least as I've seen it, is, "Finally, I made it." Which said, what's his role, in your view, in the future government? And also, if because given that your predecessor, there was quite a bit of controversy when you left the post and took the job in the UAE, I wanted to ask, I guess, just ask you, can you commit at this time, or what's your view of the appropriate, as a UN official, obviously you've only just begun, but can you commit now that when you leave the post, it will not be to an institution run by a government that has an interest in Libya?
Once again,
the controversy around Mr. Leon was that he negotiated the job at the Diplomatic Academy of the UAE.
Yeah.
Given with the UAE having a kind of a stake in the Libyan conflict. When you leave, will it not be to a institution run by a government with an interest in Libya?
Ah, okay. Now, First question, Haftar. It's up to the government to decide on what's to be done. The agreement here is very clear. Everybody remains in function for the next 20 days. And then the government, during the next 20 days, 17 days now, they have to find a solution for this. Now, if this is not possible within 20 days, there I think the agreement foresees another extension of 30 days. I was indeed with General Haftar just one day before the Sirat agreement, and I must say it was a very constructive meeting. We did not agree on everything. However, the question was very clearly raised, also the weapons embargo. Of course, fight against terrorism needs weapons. So this is something where General Haftar also has an interest, of course, in for his sphere of influence. It is up to the government to decide then what to do, and not up to the United Nations. Second question here, you see, I mean, Leon is Leon, Kobler is Kobler. You see, there will be... I don't see any conflict of interest here. I have a return ticket to the German Foreign Ministry at the end of the day. I see this quite relaxed, you know. I will have a job even if I have to terminate next month. So I will have no problem, I mean, to earn my money.
Go ahead.
Yes, Stefano Vaccara, Radio Radicale in Rome, La Voce di New York. Two things. One, what is that plan B? You said that it's very, very deep. I mean, this is the first step, but it's still this government has to be formed. Still, there has to pass the vote of the parliament. 30 days. What happens if this doesn't happen? And then about the migrants crisis. You already had those weeks where you met these people that will form the government and everything. Can you tell us this issue about the people that in Libya? They arrive in Libya, they maybe don't arrive from Syria, but they've been arriving for years from Africa, and they have a terrible journey. How these Libyans that will form this new government, how sensitive they are, you felt they are on this issue?
Now, the first question is an if question. Yeah, I mean, what if? Now, let's work first of all on the basis that that it works, and then let's discuss the hypothetical questions then later. I am really confident that now, after the Security Council resolution, that there will be now a dynamic that those who still oppose the agreement, they will join. Of course, to form a government, this needs broad consultations, and there are many problems open, and we know this. There is the question of those members of the House of Representatives in the east of the country who are not yet fully on board. The majority of the House of Representatives is mainly from the west and from the south. We assist the government in really reaching out to the east, to Benghazi, to the Cyrenaica, in order to bring them on board. Then there is the question of what to do with the security situation in Tripoli. Yes, maybe it works within the foreseen time. If it does not work, we have to find another solution. But really now, we have to start work from today on. Today, the future of Libya starts, and as I said, it is the end now of the negotiation process. We have this agreement in place, and now let's go for implementation. If it does not work, we will find a solution. I'm of the opinion, by the way, there is no problem without solution. Maybe it takes sometimes a little bit more time, but there has to be a solution.
Evelyn.
Your problem of the migrants?
Sorry.
Yeah, the second question of the migrants. Now, this is up to the government then now to tackle this problem also, because nobody has an interest that criminal gangs and mafia structures, they continue here. But we will not wake up one morning and everything is ideal. This is a process. The militias, also we will not wake up one morning and suddenly there are no militias. But we have to start, and the longest trip starts with the first step. And the sooner we start, I mean, the sooner we can address the problem. I mean the really inhuman trafficking from Africa to the coast. This, of course, has to stop. And the more a government of national unity enforces its authority over the whole of the country, the better the chances. And for this, we have to start. And today is the day where the Security Council decided, I mean, to pass this resolution on the basis of the Libyan political agreement.
Evelyn, thank you. On arms, isn't the country already awash in them? Aren't they knee-deep in them? Do they need more weapons? And secondly, what is Qatar's role these days with its support for Islamic rebels?
Now, you are totally right. These weapons are spread all over the country, but they are legitimate and they are non-legitimate units who have these weapons. It is now the task of the new government to form regular army, regular police units, law and order units, and of course policemen have must have weapons. And the army must have also heavy weapons in a legal way. We have right now in Libya police units who have pistols and the militias have tanks. Now this gradually has to stop, and law and order functions they have to prevail in Tripoli. Kidnappings every day. I went on record yesterday with the kidnapping of 3 children. This is just unacceptable, and this is inhuman to kidnap 6, 9, and 10-year-old kids of a family in order to get ransom. Now, you see, for this you need law and order also requires weapons of those units who are authorized. Role of Qatar. I must say I was thrilled by the presence of the Qatari foreign minister in Sirat. And I have spoken this morning to the Qatari minister. Also, again, I keep very close relation. I can only say this is a very constructive role taken by Qatar. We also have witnessed the Turkish foreign minister who was in Sirat and other foreign ministers, but in particular those who, where there is a perception they are on one side. Read, hear what they said in Sirat. They said it has to go on the basis of the Libyan political agreement, and this was very clear, leaving no room for interpretation.
Oleg.
Thank you, Mr. Kabler. Can you provide us with a picture? How big is the territory that is controlled by ISIS in Libya and the other groups, please? And also, when it comes to the presence, the UN presence in the country, the current and future, what changes will be needed to the mandate of the UN presence over there, when the government of the national unity will be formed, and whether there are recommendations that you will provide to the Security Council? And do you have any plan of opening an office, whether in Tripoli or in any other city? Thank you.
Yeah. Now, on the ISIS question, I mean, this is really of concern. And when I started my job 5 weeks ago, I wanted to know exactly where did ISIS stand in January this year, in June this year, and now end of the year. And the progress, in particular, dominating the area in Sirte, with beheadings, with how does one say, crucifications, and so, I mean, they are crucifying people, they are beheading people. This is really a domination in a certain area along the Gulf of Sirte. Plus, there has been over the last 3, 4, 5 months a movement to the south, which is very worrisome, to the oil fields. But also, if this goes on uncontained, you can wait until such time there is a geographical link with Boko Haram and with those who are in Niger and Chad, operating in Niger and Chad. Now, this is not at this stage yet. That's why it's very important, I mean, to get this government in place to really take care of this problem. There is also an expansion of the ISIS to the east and to the west, direction of Tripoli, but also to Ras Lanuf, the oil terminal. Yeah, I mean, it's very important, I mean, to stop it and to contain it. And this only can be done by a really robust action by an effective government. Your second question on UNSMIL, well, we are still on security evacuation, and what I've been doing over the last weeks was doing day trips into Tripoli, Tobruk, Beida, Marj to see General Haftar. This is in his headquarters 100 kilometers south of El Beida in the Gulf of Sirte. I'm of the definite opinion that we cannot accompany the government with assistance and with support in an efficient way if we are not operating out of Tripoli. That's why the aim, of course, is as quickly as possible, even with small stuff, to go back to Tripoli and not to operate out of Tunis.
George.
Thank you. You mentioned the need to broaden the appeals so that you encourage the holdout parties, as one might call them. As you know, we just had a session with Ambassador Rycroft at which he mentions, he assured me in response to my question, that the holdout parties include the legislature sitting in, which has been sitting in Tobruk. I know this is asking you to make a value judgment. How reconcilable do you think those people are, and therefore what are the chances of getting them into the game, into the government, as it were? And also, you mentioned the possibility of a link-up with Boko Haram. Would that not create a line dividing the continent in half, with a line going from Libya southwest into certainly northeastern Nigeria, possibly Cameroon and Chad? And having territory to the east of that and to the west of that, and territory to the east and southeast, and might not be passable in that eventuality. Thank you.
Now, starting with your last question, I would not depict this specter of the big terrorist kind of threat of ISIS going south, liaising with Boko Haram at this stage. However, you have to have it in the back of your mind. That's why it's so important to act quickly. And that's why it's so important to have this government of national unity in place in order to prevent exactly this scenario. I like always to think a little bit ahead. Where do we stand in 6 months from now? Where do we stand end of December 2016? Yeah, not only to get from one day to the other, but to think a little bit strategically and say, where do we want to stand end of December 2016? At least not to have an expansion of the Daesh, but a shrinking of the sphere of influence of the Daesh. This is the task of 2016, that this scenario will not happen. If it happens, it would have really disastrous consequences, yes. And this was also the reason for the speed neighboring states put on the signing of the Skhirat agreement, of the Libyan political agreement in Skhirat, to really go ahead and not to wait and not to open this Libyan political agreement and negotiate another 6 months or 9 months on this. No, it has to be done now to get an efficient government in place to prevent exactly what you just said. Your first question, help me. This was what?
The legislature sitting.
How to bring them on board?
How to bring them in? How reconcilable?
Yeah.
Reconcilable are they?
Yeah. Now.
I know it's asking you to make a value judgment.
Yes. No. But this is something which is now very high on the agenda. There are two things which are very high on the agenda. Number one, security. Number two, this national reconciliation. To stretch out, as the British ambassador said, to stretch out the hand. To those who are not yet there. This means, but in concrete terms, to have a concrete timetable roadmap on the following. Municipalities. How to get the municipalities on board. Even after the Skhirat signature, the day before yesterday, we arranged a meeting with municipalities in Tunis, and 24 municipalities signed the Libyan political agreement on behalf of 40. The others could not be there. I admit, these were municipalities from the west and to the south. These were not so many municipalities from the east. That's why we have to work with them. Benghazi is a central problem. It's a shame to have this town destroyed, to have internally displaced persons, and this has to end. There must be, and I suggested it, three things for Benghazi, and this is also a stretched out hand to bring the Cyrenaica on board. First, a reconstruction fund for Benghazi. This city has to be reconstructed. Second, to organize the return of refugees. And third, a compensation fund for the victims of terrorism. These are three concrete measures I proposed. And as soon as security permits, I would like to go to Benghazi and really to present it to people. I met the mayor of Benghazi, who's fully on board with the Sirat agreement. Yeah, this city is really a tormented city, and United Nations should not let it happen. The other measures could be tribal meetings. Tribes play a very important role in the East, not so much in the West, but more in the East, to get the tribes on board. So municipalities, tribes, civil society, and this might end up in a kind of shura. Then accompanying the new government to fulfill its task.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.